You are listening to Right Back At Ya, the 2000s pop music podcast where we have fun taking pop music seriously. Hosted by the boy that wants you to come on over, baby, but you've got to rub him the right way, David.
Oh my God.
Lim. And that's your new Grindr profile, darling.
Oh my God.
And me, you may think you see who I really am, but you'll never know me, darling. Joel Babington. Hello, David. How are you doing?
Good, thanks, Jolie B. Thank you for that intro. Yeah.
Just a bit of fun, just a bit of pop music lyrics.
Just a bit of cheeky fun, you know what I mean?
As our girl's going to say later on, it's actually about empowerment, not about S-E-X.
X for X-tina.
X for X-tina. How are you doing, Davo?
Very good, thanks, Jolie B. Look, we are coming towards the end of the year, and do you know what? So, so very grateful for everyone's support of our Right Back At Ya podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the lovely five-star reviews, the tweets, the Insta stories, the comments on socials, the DMs. Even just today in my day job, Joel, as some of you might know, I'm a music and entertainment publicist. Part of my job is dealing with media. In fact, it's a very important part of my job. And like, I had two separate journalists, like one from The Guardian and one from the NME, like email about work related stuff. And then just went, by the way, love the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, you guys are listening. So it's just like, it's just really, really cool when moments like that happen.
Especially when it takes a second out of your day and you're like, oh, especially when you're in work mode.
It's just a nice reminder that, oh wow, like people see what we do, you know, outside of our day job kind of situations. So it's really lovely.
David, so much is going on. As we have gone to hit record today, Atomic Kitten have said they've got plans to fully reunite next year with the definitive lineup. That's Natasha, that's Liz, and that's Heidi Range.
Oh.
I'm joking. It's not Heidi, but it is the queen of pop that we've all been waiting for to reclaim her crown as a pure pop princess. That's right. The Ibiza queen, Jennifer Frost, is finally coming back to Atomic Kitten properly, not just for a football song.
You know, anyone who's been listening to our podcast the last 3 years knows that Jenny is like the totem pop star for our podcast. We joke all the time, but we're really deadly serious about wanting to do like a Right Back At Ya presents the Jenny Frost stage at Mighty Hoopla. Like, that is the dream.
Oh, amazing. And David, another little bit of news from us is that the Clapham Grand have invited us to their Christmas party, haven't they?
This is so special and so unexpected. So thank you, Clapham Grand, for thinking of us. If you want to see the JB and myself live in the flesh,
we are hosting a Right Back At Ya party room. We're going to have 2000s bops. We're going to have karaoke. We're going to have loads of fun. Come and celebrate Christmas with us. It's going to be a fantastic way to end the year. And I look forward to just having a party.
And look forward to meeting you guys. Anyone that can come down, please do. 17th of December. Tickets are available on the Clapham Grand's website.
Oh, and you know, there are S Club All Stars as well on the main stage.
Oh. Make it sound like, okay, yeah, we're there. But also, actually, the headliners are.
So it's Clapham Grand, it's Tina, Bradley, Stacey, it's us. We're going to be in a party room. We're going to shut the room when S Club are on because we are not missing that. We can all party together. We are going to have so much fun. Hope to see you there. All right, David, before we get into it, can you read us a lovely five-star review?
Absolutely. And this one is left from the United States of America.
Good morning, America. Thank you, baby.
This one is by Zachary Adam. Hello, Zachary. The title is My New UK Best Friends in My Head. I'm so thankful for this podcast. I hope you left this on Thanksgiving because, you know, that would have been a time to be super thankful. So thank you. I am so thankful for this podcast. As an American with a love for UK pop culture, it is a great listen to fill in all the moments I missed in the noughties. I've binged all the episodes and am obsessed with Joel's accents.
I don't do any accents on this show. What's he talking about? I get embodied by them. They take over.
Zachary says, hoping that we can get a 20 years of Willa Ford episode soon. Oh.
Ow, ow, I wanna be bad with you, baby. Oh, oh, oh.
She's not such an innocent girl. The OG, not such an innocent girl. So thank you so much, Zachary. And guys, if you do want to leave us a lovely 5-star review, you can do so on Apple Podcasts. And that would really help with our visibility and, you know, make us look like, hey, we got listeners.
Exactly. Do what DL says. And thank you, Zachary. And if you're not already, please do follow us at Right Back Pod on all socials. Right, Davo, I think it's time to get the red highlight clipping extensions in. And I think we need to go for it.
Wow. Look, we here at Right Back Catcher love the Fab Fours. If you've been listening to us for a while, you know the JB has canonized Britney, Jessica Simpson, Mandy Moore, and today's artist, Christina Aguilera, as the holy Fab Four, right?
Exactly. The other Fab Four, you know, not the Beatles, but the important Fab Four.
I always forget people call the Beatles the Fab Four because now in my head is these four blondes. So when you say Beatles, I was like, oh, who?
That's why I call them the other Fab Four. But I love that to you, they are the definitive Fab Four. And to my heart, they're the definitive Fab Four.
To right back at your listeners, this is the Fab Four that matters. So yes, look, we love Christina Aguilera. Do we bring her up often? Not really, but in our heart of hearts, we've wanted to do a tribute to Christina, to celebrate her career for a long time. And sometimes it's like, how do we do it? How do we break it down? So do we do one big thing with the first two albums? No, too much, you know, as much as we would love to, let's take a decent chunk of her debut era, which is what we're doing today. And then we'll do Stripped next time, darling.
Absolutely. I love that you're saying we wanted to do a tribute to Christina Aguilera. Join us on the 17th.
Oh my god, can you imagine if we just announced our like Christina Aguilera tribute act just then?
With an exclusive residency at the Clapham Grand.
Ha-ha. By the way, you're gonna get me every single time with this episode where you do that. Ha-ha.
Ha-ha.
It's just so signature Christina. But anyway, look, it's about time that we put some respect on this diva's name. Christina Aguilera is not only an icon of the late 90s teen pop boom, but you know what? She also set the template for pop vocalists from the 2000s onwards. Everyone wanted to emulate the way she sang. I know you went to a performing arts school, JB, so you would have had a fair dose of that. But even me in primary school, high school, like, you know, girls that do music performance lessons and they will sing at assembly, everybody wanted to emulate Christina. Myself included, but I never put myself forward. But, you know, in my room, it's, I turn to you. That's just me in the bedroom.
Yes, absolutely. If I think every girl, boy, whoever, everyone at my school, you'd get together and it was reflection. That's the moment, because it's a meeting of musical theatre and pop, isn't it? So,
and Disney.
Take that moment and Disney. And we're all waiting in the wings for our Disney contracts. So that's the moment that everyone feels it. Who is the girl I see?
You've become Ray Charles. I love it.
Instead of I see trees of green, is when will my reflection show who I am inside?
So yeah, career-wise, in my opinion, Christina Aguilera is our generation's sort of hybrid of Mariah in terms of vocal influence on a generation.
And Jessica Simpson.
Yes, Jessica too. Yes, we can't forget about J-Simp. But also a little bit of a cross with Madonna by way of audacity and kind of artistic authority. You know, Christina's very
powerful.
Yeah, no, she knows what she wants. And I think apart from this first album, everything onwards in her career, she's like, what she says goes, you know what I mean? And you got to really respect that. And every era, every album, she gives you a look, she gives you a concept, she switches it up. So props to Christina in that sense. She is a real multifaceted global superstar. You know, she gave you something to stand, whether you're in Latin America or Asia, where I grew up. I actually think maybe Christina Aguilera is bigger outside of the US, like in terms of her impact on culture. Do you think she's bigger outside the US than she's respected there?
I wouldn't say bigger because, you know, we've seen her do huge US tours, residencies, but the glove is global. There's no denying that.
So Christina has released 8 studio albums to date and sold over 57 million records worldwide. She has had 17 UK top 10 singles, 4 of which were number ones. She has 5 Grammy Awards and is often considered by the likes of Rolling Stone as one of the greatest singers of all time. Today, we are celebrating her massive debut album, Christina Aguilera, which sold over 10 million copies worldwide and spawned 4 hit singles and a Disney soundtrack hit. We're going to take it all the way up to her 2001 Grammy-winning Lady Marmalade collaboration with Pink, Lil Kim, and friend of the podcast, Maya.
Woo!
I just want to say that, friend of the podcast, because not only did...
Can't believe it.
Cannot believe an actual Grammy winner has been on this podcast, Joel, apart from you.
I don't think the Romford Grammys care, Colin.
A Grammy is a Grammy, as I always say. So yeah, Maya, what an icon. So generous with her time. And also when we did our mailbag episode, she sent a voice note, didn't she?
Bless her heart. We love you, Maya.
And thank you, Joe Daddick, for setting that up.
And thank you, Joe. Still pinching myself about it. We'll be, you know how we were saying, you know, Heidi bringing it up at dinner parties, Lady Gaga. I'm still bringing Maya up till forever, you know?
Absolutely. Look, let's, given that this is our first Christina Aguilera episode, first of very many, let's set a bit of foundation, give a bit of background, where she's from, all that stuff. Because, you know, this is a name that I feel like we all grew up with, and some of you may know her backstory, some of you may not. But Christina was born in New York and raised in Pennsylvania. She moved around a lot as a kid due to her father being in the military. She even spent some time in Japan. So it wasn't just like, oh.
3 years.
That is a long time for a kid. And also like, yeah, what about school? What about adjustment periods and all that? Like it's a lot for a child to go through. But that was her childhood. From a young age, it was really obvious that her love for singing was there and she had an outstanding voice. But it wasn't until she was 6 when she lived with her maternal grandparents that her grandma said, oh, she could maybe be something with this, like, you know, she could pursue this professionally. So it was then that it started, you know, pushing her forward. Hey, you know, why don't you sing at this thing? Why don't you do that? Why don't you do Star Search, as you would do at that time?
Exactly. And, you know, Beyonce and Girls Time did Star Search. Britney did Star Search. I believe Justin Timberlake did Star Search.
Win or lose, it was a huge national TV opportunity. And after that stint, Christina went back to school and she noticed her classmates and her schoolmates' attitude changed towards her. Jealousy, as the Paris Hilton track goes. She was bullied a lot there, having a difficult time. At 16, her mum decided, you know what? I'm going to take you out of school. I'm going to homeschool you instead because it's just becoming a little too much and relentless. Oh, sorry. We're going to step back a little. I went straight to teenage Christina. Ha ha. But really...
We're going to need to rewind. It's in 1991 that everything really started to change. She auditioned for the Mickey Mouse Club for the first time. And she was too young, David. But she really did capture the producers' attention and they really fought for her. But child labour laws, rightfully so.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. She was too young to be on the show. 2 years later, she's back. She's old enough to be on the show. She pulls the rug out from Jessica Simpson and she makes it into the cast. Joining her that year, we have Britney Jean Spears, Ryan Gosling, JC Chazet is already on the show, as is Kerry Russell, and Justin Timberlake also joins that year. 2 years at the height of Disney Channel, they are loving it. They are getting experience of what this industry is like. We've spoken about the Mickey Mouse Club before on this show. We've got skits, we've got performing. Imagine a very young Disney Channel version of Saturday Night Live with a bit more current hits from the cast in there. That's what you've got. And unfortunately, after 2 years, it's cancelled.
it was just a very shell-shocking moment for these kids because it was like their dream job, and it probably didn't even feel like a job because they just get to have fun and do what they love to do. And, you know, for Christina, she didn't, from what we can tell, she didn't go to like a performing arts kind of school. Like she didn't have like formal singing lessons or anything like that. So when she joined a Mickey Mouse Club, she was kind of like, oh, wow, there are other kids that love to do what I do. And, you know, these are my people, so to speak. And in a documentary, it says that, yeah, her and Britney actually formed a very close bond during this time because they were quite similar in age and they shared a dressing room and stuff like that. One of my favorite stories from this sort of Mickey Mouse Club era is that the casting director, when he met with Christina, she had a little brown suitcase with her full of cassettes. And, you know, she basically like opened up the suitcase and was like, what do you want to hear? And it was like, he said, swear to God, it was about 50 songs that she had memorized off by heart. Just pick a cassette and she would give you a little performance. But that was how like driven and ready she was, you know, like being a singer was all she ever wanted to do. And she turned up to that casting ready.
Absolutely.
Are you ready? I'm ready.
She was ready. She was like from six ready. Like even I weren't ready at six. Like that's pretty impressive. And then after the Mickey Mouse Club, she's actually really determined to, I think she wanted to release her debut album in her senior year of high school. I mean, I think we all had that ambition. We were all like, if we're not going to, 16 is the when I'm going to release the album, blah, blah, blah. She was working with producers and she wasn't really happy with where it was going. She ends up going to Japan, David.
So yeah, these years are really interesting because she had interest from a Japanese artist, Keizo Nakanishi, who wanted to feature her on a single. So she flew out there, recorded for the single, and then end up staying there and supporting him on tour around Japan. So why not?
Sud this. Ha ha, I'm off to Japan. And that song was called All I Wanna Do, not a cover of the Danielle Jane song.
So in late 1997-1998 time, Christina Aguilera caught the attention of super producer and star maker Ron Fair at RCA Records. Ron, you would have heard us mention him before in our Pussycat Dolls episode. He's very instrumental there. But this point in Ron's career, Christina actually, from what I can tell, is his like protege, like is his first kind of big development artist that broke through and became a huge global success. So good on Christina and Ron. Around this time, I think Christina must have been like 17 or something at this point. She had heard that Britney signed a deal with Jive Records, and that must have been like in 1997 or something. So she felt a little bit of pressure like, oh gosh, you know, my peers are getting signed and things are moving and I need to move as well. So luckily she does bag a deal with RCA Records. And the same week she signed her deal, Ron Fair heard that Disney was looking for a vocalist for the Mulan soundtrack. Now they said, look, this needs to be a real singer. Like they need to be able to do at least two octaves. It's a very demanding song. Who have you got in mind?
And she said, oh my God, can I hit the high C over E? I said, Mom, can I do it? And she said, I don't know. So I went into the bathroom with this little tape recorder in the shower and I belted out the song. She actually recorded a Whitney Houston song, I believe, because that had the same big note in it.
I think it was Run to You, yeah.
And yeah, she nailed it. Of course she did. She's off recording Reflection for the Mulan soundtrack.
Yeah, so June 1998, Reflection, the very, very first song we hear from Christina Aguilera. Huge song, you know, like this is the kind of, if you're a singer, like this is your kind of dream song, isn't it? Like you can really flex vocally on this one.
Oh, absolutely. As I said, the girls and the boys got around when it got to this track. This is our moment, you know, really feeling it. So, David, let's go cast your mind back to 1998. Did you see the Mulan film? Was this on your radar, or is it after the album of Christina was released that you like rewound and picked up the song?
Do you know what? There was so much around Mulan, especially because in 1998, I was still living in Malaysia at the time, and Asia definitely got the big Mulan push, obviously. It was literally like maybe years and years later that I watched this animated version of Mulan for the first time. But I knew the song because it was just all, you know, by the time I moved to Australia, everyone was talking about Christina Aguilera, and then Reflection kept coming up as one of her standards. So
the girls in Australia had their own version of the brown suitcase. And Reflection was one of the standards in that.
So, yeah, what did you think of this song when you first heard it?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think initially we probably all took it in as like the Disney song, you know, how like the modern version is now like when Let It Go came out or whatever. So I don't know if we really took it in as like, who's this singer? We just wanted to sing along to this.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Big Disney song. But it's such a gorgeous track. Still to this day, I absolutely adore it. Quite a low budget music video for a big Disney film. But I'm trying to think if really, if they ever really even go for it. Even when Demi Lovato did Let It Go, I don't think it was like this huge
music
video.
It would
video.
Be like such a simple setup, and then they'll just cut in scenes from the film, isn't it? That seems to be the go-to way of doing it. So one thing really interesting is that this song was written and produced by Matthew Wilder, who in the 80s had that hit, Break My Stride. I got to keep on moving. Ain't nothing gonna break my stride.
It's called range, darling. Very versatile. Maybe that inspired him to write Reflection. He's like, when will my reflection show who I am inside? It's genius.
Yeah, so this single in the international version, Coco Lee, this Hong Kong American singer and actress, did the Mandarin version of this. So I did kind of vaguely remember that, yeah, Coco Lee was somehow associated with this soundtrack as well. I always find it really fascinating when they're like just different versions for different markets.
Yeah, I always think it makes sense though, especially like when things like in our childhood or teenage years came out, like High School Musical, at the end there'd always be a track of a more localized version. So we'd normally get the American version, but around the world they would have, you know, different versions of one song from the soundtrack, which I think is quite a clever way to
tap into the local market and the audience. And then that artist could probably be there to do the promotion for it. And they've got that connection with the fans. I think that one of the Narnia films had Joe McElderry on it. I'm like, how did he get that? But then I realized it was a UK only thing.
Well, you know, I went through the wardrobe, right?
I found myself on the soundtrack.
I was only trying to find a pair of shoes.
So this single, I can't find a US chart position for this.
I can. US Adult Contemporary Billboard 19.
So not on the main Billboard chart, okay. But still Adult Contemporary, that counts.
Not everybody has that, Davo.
Look, it was a number 2 hit in the Philippines. So, you know, them kids out there were singing to this.
And still are, hopefully. 87 in South Africa and 86 on the South Korea international charts. This came out. RCA really wanted to hit the ground running, David. They wanted to capitalize on this. They didn't want to lose momentum. There are reports that the debut album from Christina Aguilera was going to come out in January 1999. That didn't happen. It ended up being a summer launch. But what I think could have happened is they were recording a maybe more adult contemporary,
more ballady
album,
version, yeah.
Ballady. And then the teen pop explosion happened and Miss Britney Jean Spears came onto the scene and they knew they had this blonde starlet and they wanted to capitalize on it.
Yeah, it definitely kickstarted a new wave for teen pop. You know, this was coming off the strength of Backstreet Boys, Spice Girls. I think we're getting NSYNC at this point, or we're not getting NSYNC as yet.
Getting NSYNC, darling.
Exactly. So it just kind of made sense that, okay, let's switch gears a little bit, delay the album release. Let's find a suitable single that, you know, will ride this wave. Which brings us to
summer 1999.
Yes, we are now here in June 1999, like literally, what, a year after Reflection comes out, and we get a very different sound from Christina Aguilera and a very different image with Genie in a Bottle. Wow. Now, this is the debut single.
Now, what an entrance, David.
So good.
It is still one of the greatest songs of all time to me. And every time that it is played, it goes off.
It's just so well produced and so slick. It is done by Steve Kipner, who also wrote Not Such an Innocent Girl for Victoria Beckham. Christina didn't like this at first. She was like, she didn't want this to be the debut single. She wanted something that had a little bit more, you know, that showed off her vocal chops a bit more.
The song was originally going to be called If You Want to Be With Me. And David, do you know who the song was almost going to go to?
Not Willa Ford.
Innocence.
Oh.
The lost Lou Pearlman girl band. And there's always that talk, was Britney ever a member of Innocence? Wasn't she a member of Innocence?
And this was Innocence with the S-E-N-S-E, right? Innocence.
Yes.
Ugh, made no sense.
And apparently the songwriters actually did think, okay, well, it kind of seemed like it was tallying up, like this would be a good single for a girl band. You can kind of see it. And then they heard Kagi Yagi and they thought, we need this.
Is that her, like, East London nickname?
Yeah, I mean, it is to me. I don't know if it, and I think Alex says it sometimes, but I just assume it's canon.
Needless to say, the lyrics are a little bit sexy and a little bit suggestive.
Yes. Now, I just want to say this, even right from off the bat, Christina's lyrical content from the get-go is a little bit more sexual than the other three members of the Fab Four.
Look, it kind of is like, you know, sexual references, but also it kind of is from like a very empowered woman place.
Absolutely.
You know, she's in control. She'll let you know if you're rubbing her the wrong way. You're not getting the genie out of the bottle like that. You need to come correct. By 99, I was already, that was the year we moved to Australia and I was starting the final year of primary school. Everyone was obsessed with Britney and Christina and Mandy and Jessica. I'll just say that for you. And Dawson's Creek. God, this song was on the radios all the time. You would turn on Video Hits on Channel 10 and there you see Christina on the beach doing a bit of choreo in cargo trousers. And it was just like, wow, like, who is this girl? And, you know, at that time, I didn't really think much of the lyrics. I just thought, okay, I like a little bit of R&B. I like a little bit of this groove. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I even thought about the lyrics until, like, this year. You're just like, banger, sing along, done.
My body's saying, let's go.
But my heart is saying, no, no.
Now, this music video was directed by Diane Martel, and it was shot in Malibu in California. Every teenager wanted to be in that scene. You know, they wanted the beach parties, they wanted to do the choreo, they wanted to be her or they wanted to date her. Like, it was just the look.
Nighttime party on the beach. Already, actually watching it now, I thought, do you know what? That's a really interesting choice, because all the other music videos of the time, especially of the Fab Four, it's all daytime. It's like very accessible, and this is still accessible but in a slightly cooler way. It's like, come to this party on the beach.
Yeah, and this is very like, I've got no curfew, or I don't care about my curfew, I'm going to the beach with my friends tonight.
Oh my god, thank goodness Mumsnet wasn't around at the time. I'm sorry, but my Janice is very badly influenced by this. Her curfew is 9 p.m. and she wants to stay out till 10:30. because of Christina Aguilera. I don't even want to know what a genie in a bottle is, all right? It's just cool. And what I like about it is it just had such a confidence straight away. Like, she dances, but it's laid back. She isn't, it's not all about the dancing, but there is obviously a routine because we need that. That is the assignment. David, this song was and still is absolutely huge. This is, along with a lot of other people that we cover, this is like a template of how to kick off a pop career. And David, boy, was it kicked off with a bang. The first TV performance for this, David, on American television was at the Teen Choice Awards.
Oh, yeah, that is how you launch it. Also, that might be the other reason why they decided to hold the album release for summer, because there's probably more stuff in the diary that she could do that's really cool and really big looks with the right song. So with Genie, they were like, okay, we have to do the Teen Choice Awards. So
absolutely. And I loved that. So me and David watched this E! Documentary from back in the day, and just that cheesy American journalist. And they were at the Teen Choice Awards, and Jennifer Love Hewitt turns around to Sarah Michelle Gellar, and they're like, oh my God, who is that tiny little girl with the big voice? What a time.
What a time.
So, David, yes, we've got some lovely tracks appearing on the B-sides here. We've got We're a Miracle, which was also featured on the iconic Pokemon first movie soundtrack, along with Emma, Britney, NSYNC, Bewitched. And now what I really love here is we have the track Don't Make Me Love You. This is a banger, and it gives me very early Robin vibes, and it puts the fun in funke. Till I'm ready. Don't make me give you more than my kisses. I need you to go slow and steady. Don't make me love you till I'm ready.
Yeah, so this is now on the expanded version of the album. So when you go on streaming the Christina Aguilera album, you find that at the end, yeah.
Before we leave this song, David, there was a very notable cover in 2016 from a Ms. Dove Cameron giving us a big Disney-fied version of the song, causing a bit of a generational
war.
I wasn't going to go as dramatic as that, but... People, there was this whole BuzzFeed article. Gen Z were like commenting on Christina's video after the Dove Cameron cover came out and went, you need to learn how to sing. Dove did it much better. And then, you know, our generation are like, you do not tell Miss Christina Aguilera she needs to sing. She's the vocal Bible for a Miss Dove Cameron. I'm sure Dove adores Christina. She seems like an angel. She has the voice of an angel. It's just fan wars, and it's really funny.
Her fans needed to get on Google. Google is free. Do your research.
So let's talk about mammoth chart positions for this song, shall we, Davo?
Absolutely. So off the back, radio airplay was super strong for Genie in a Bottle. So the label felt like, okay, we definitely made the right choice with this single. Genie in a Bottle shot to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 and stayed there for 5 consecutive weeks. It became the biggest song of the summer in 1999. At that point, it had the longest stay at number one for the entire year, tying with Ricky Martin's Livin' La Vida Loca and J-Lo's If You Had My Love. So, wow, 99 was such a good year, wasn't it?
Pure perfection.
Jerry's Sugar... Machico Latino.
I mean, the Latin pop explosion.
Yeah, which we'll get to a little bit later with our ex-Tina, yes.
But yeah, just it was that perfect mixture of like pop and it, but and everything was sexy, but it was so fun and innocent and there was no hardened edge yet. It was just... 99 is like Dr. Pepper. Oh.
Just to quickly add, with the US, Genie in a Bottle was the second best-selling single of 1999 with 1.3 million units sold. It was only behind Cher's Believe, another incredible hit of 99.
Oh God, wow. Yeah. So as you said, Davo, huge US number one, huge UK number one, Australia number two. You and the girls didn't love it as much as you should have, but a number two is very good.
It was a big number two in Australia.
It was a big playground hit. Number one on the European Euro chart, Hot 100. Number three in France. Come on, France, what are you doing? Where else have we got? Number one in Norway, Hello Norway. Four in Scotland. Now, Scottish charts, I'm pretty shocked at you there. Canada 2 and 1 on their respective charts. Number one in Denmark.
Fantastic. So look, off the strength of that summer hit with Genie in a Bottle, no choice but to release this debut album in August 1999.
Well, look, when you drop the song of the summer, you got to drop the album of the summer so the girlies have something to listen to in the car, in the playground.
Give them the album, exactly. So the Christina Aguilera album comes out that summer. JB, did you get into this album back in the day?
No, but then I did then go out and buy the album 2003, 2004. It was between Stripped and Back to Basics. I got into like a real first album Christina phase. I bought the My Reflection DVD, which had the concert on it. I got this album special edition. Oh, I like was obsessed. Typical me, like a few years after it all happened, I'm like, I have to have it. And then I have it on vinyl now. I have an orange vinyl with it on. Oh, Urban wow. Outfitters. It's gorgeous. And I love this album, David. It is a perfect teen pop album of the late 90s.
Now, listen, there are four massive hit singles, which we will absolutely be getting into in timeline fashion, as we usually do. And of course, Reflection is on this album as well. So really, there's like five singles.
Yeah. Do you, if you were Christina, would you have put Reflection on the album?
100%. Yeah. A is a song that she could really, really sing. And B, it's a Disney soundtrack song. Yeah. Don't put it as a bonus track or something like that. Not when Reflection is so much better than a lot of the album tracks. Like, give it to us at track 6. Yes, I said what I said.
Wow, David Lim.
JB, look, I know you love this album more than I do, so you go ahead and tell me your highlights first.
Let's all get a bit sexy, everyone. My favourite, not only favourite track on this album, one of my favourite Christina Aguilera songs, one of my favourite songs of the Fab Four, full stop. And that song is When You Put Your Hands on Me. This is like why we love this era. This is like a slick pop girl in your face album track. It is a sexy banger. I was a bit shook the first time I heard this because it was just like, oh, this is a bit saucy, Christina. but I loved it. It is co-written by Robin Thicke, so I don't really love that about it, but it's a fucking banger, mate. She ends up using it in the Coca-Cola adverts next year.
Ooh, okay. Yes, Christina. All right. I actually didn't mind Love for All Seasons.
I got my love for all seasons, love for all time. Really good. I mean, I don't know why she's suddenly at the Northern Town Hall.
So this one is written by Carl Sturken and Evan Rogers, who will go on to discover Rihanna many years later. And they've worked with so, so many of our pop faves as well. Look, I gotta be honest, a lot of these tracks do sound like, yeah, prototype of what you would pitch to an artist that just had Reflection on the Mulan soundtrack. So it kind of feels a little bit dated, a little bit not all that flashy and exciting, especially when you have those singles that are so big and shiny. These tracks just kind of feel a bit like half-baked, but that's okay, you know, that's all
right.
Which
I guess would also make sense why two of the singles get remix treatments before they're even released as singles, but we'll talk about that in due course. Now, David, it's a great teen pop album. you know, of the time. It's got 1999 production, and that's what I love about it. Another favorite of mine is You Make Me Feel So Emotional.
And, you know, just like All I Want to Do wasn't a Danny Minogue cover, this isn't a Whitney Houston cover, sadly. Although I'm sure Christina would have wanted to do a Whitney cover. She had that little cassette in her brown suitcase. Yeah.
This one?
You sure you don't want this one?
Tried to swap it.
Yeah. I get so emotional, baby.
Welcome Jane McDonald to the call.
Listen, guys, I'm really sorry to all the Christina fans out there. You've got Ray Charles, you've got Jane McDonald. It's a lot. You took me high and low. You know, I'm never sure which way you're gonna go. You're such a mystery to me. You're such a mystery to me. But baby, heart of cold, you got a hold of my imagination. I think you know what I mean. No. It's just like, this is what you want from a teen pop album. And I actually think this is an album sits really hand in hand with Mandy Moore's first album. It is a stereotypical teen pop bubblegum album. And I think you actually have that less so with Britney's and Jessica's debut albums. Yeah, those albums had definitely a lot more, like, they take a little bit more of a risk with some of the genres and styles there, for sure.
I think if you want teen pop, go with Christina Aguilera's Christina Aguilera and go with Mandy Moore's So Real.
But do you know what? One thing that's very interesting is obvious. The final track on a standard edition of the album is here. Yes. Now, this was one of those early demos that Christina recorded that found its way to Ron Fair and kind of made him think, okay, well, most of these songs are crap, but there's this one song called Obvious that's actually quite okay. So, yeah, this is from OG Christina recording sessions.
It was that song specifically that made him think, this girl would be great for this song Reflection on the Mulan soundtrack. Whoa, isn't it obvious that I don't know what I'm doing anymore? I'm feeling like a little girl. I know what will happen. He's going to edit this episode and go, Joe, actually, these songs are really good. Oh, I should have said it in the record. Oh. But yeah, fan-bloody-tastic.
Maybe I just need to sit with it a little bit more. Maybe, you know, the dead wintry months here in the UK. It's just what I need. Love for all seasons. That kind of vibe.
Exactly. So this, David, was a huge number one album in America. Now, that is really fantastic. She's really standing her ground where the press are making comparisons to Miss Spears. She's really saying, I'm Christina Aguilera and I am doing my thing here, you know.
They must have been so chuffed that this debuted at number one. So literally, first week sales of 252,000 copies, beating Puff Daddy, which nobody at that time, even in her own team, thought that was going to be possible.
See you at the Billboard Awards, Puff Daddy.
Certifying octuple platinum in America for sales of over 8 million copies, which in the end, yeah, made 14 million copies worldwide. Absolutely smashed it.
Number 14 here in the UK, which I think is very interesting. Just took a little bit more of a minute to get the groove in. And
so, yeah, actually, in its initial run in the UK, it debuted at number 21. And then it fell out of the top 30 for a little bit. And it wasn't until March 2000 that it reached its peak of number 14. So we needed a few more singles just to get us warmed up.
Number one in Canada. 5 on the Swiss album charts, 4 on the South African charts, 40 on the Scottish album charts. Come on, Scotland, what were you thinking?
Come on, Aberdeen, where were you?
21 on the Australian album charts, David. I think the girlies on the playground just didn't have enough pocket money.
Do you know what? This album was so present. I believe, actually, that they had a reissue version with the Come On Over image. So that's what got me kind of thinking, oh, there were two different albums.
Yeah.
Because her image was so different drastically from the Genie in a Bottle stuff and this album coming out this summer to a few singles down the line. So it really got me confused. I thought there were two separate releases. But yeah, look, this album was inescapable in Australia. You just saw it everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it just needed the red streaks. But even there's clips of Christina at the time in the midst of the promo, and she's like, these pictures don't even look like me anymore. So I wonder, it might have even been her that pushed for like a reissue.
Yeah, and I think it naturally happens because, yeah, they had so many singles on this album and she was growing so quickly and she was coming into her own. So it made sense to just do a new shoot.
Year-end charts for 2000, it was number 8 in America. And year-end charts for 2001, it was 96 in America. So that's 3 years of longevity there. Platinum in Australia and the UK, 8 times platinum in America. Honestly, it was a brilliant time for all involved. So, David, you release a huge main pop girl album of the summer. So there's only one thing left to do. Release an XXXmas single, the Christmas song Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire.
Yeah, so it's really interesting that we're not getting a Christina Aguilera Christmas album this year. That's still to come. But do you know what? RCA thought, you know, while we're doing a big push for single number 2, let's give her something that she can perform as well for the festive season, which is very savvy, very clever. So it really shows that they are not missing a trick here. They're really wanting Christina to be plugged in and just absolutely everywhere and just going for it at this time.
So, you know, it is what it is. It's a Christmas standard. Christina sings it as you'd expect. She sings her heart out. And it was number 18 on the Billboard Hot 100.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like
So do you know what, Joe? I must say, while we're talking about Christmas, like in the past few weeks, our 2019 Christmas special has been in our top 5 most listened to episodes of the week. So people are going back and revisiting our Christmas songs, our Christmas picks.
David doesn't like Christmas pop. So that was like a struggle to get him to record that. That's why there's not been a Christmas special since.
Oh, so you only needed to do one and then people come back every year. That's the whole point of people doing Christmas albums.
One and done.
Maybe in 2022, we'll do an updated version like Mariah's Merry Christmas to you.
Ha ha, we're back. You know what? He thought about it and he loved Christmas. It was a great time. And he thought everyone needed a bit more Christmas cheer. Well, we'll find out. Anyway, this is what's much more exciting. No offense to the chestnuts and roasting on an open fire. Rounding off 1999, but really kicking off the year 2000 with What a Girl Wants.
What a girl wants, what a girl needs, whatever makes me happy sets you free.
Listen, they're really not straying too far from the formula that was set with Genie in a Bottle. You know, this is a light pop R&B number. It doesn't quite give that kind of snap, crackle and pop of Genie in a Bottle. But this sets the tone of, you know, this is Christina Aguilera, the very empowered, confident woman. You know, she is telling you what a girl wants.
And David, I absolutely adore this song. Now, what's interesting to me is that on the very original pressing of the album, it had a different version of the song on it. And then And then they didn't do an official re-release, but they just, you know, did, they kind of, you know, just put out a new version of the debut with the single version on. So there's actually not that many versions of this album with the original version on, but you can hear it on YouTube, just putting What a Girl Wants original version. It just sounds a little bit more demo-y, a little bit more like 90s funky. Oh, yeah. A weaker man might have walked away, but you have faith. Strong enough to move over and give me space while I got it together. Yeah, while I figured it out. God, this music video, Joel, isn't it hilarious? That open dialogue where her and her girls storm into this room where all the boys are, basically like gets them to sit in a corner. I got something for you. Don't peek. All the energy's there, but it's just one main location. But we do have to add the one random short historic scene because we're in 99-2000 and we love a sexy Titanic-y vibe.
Oh my God. Don't you think she looks a little bit like Taylor Swift with that hair?
I think it's the prelude to Lady Marmalade.
Yes, this is the Disney princess version. And then she grows up, has a little bit of life experience, and that's where you see her in Lady Marmalade.
So, I mean, I love it, but it's so of the time. That one scene is so short and so random, but it's so like, do you think they thought the video needs something more? And, you know, we saw everyone was doing something this vibe at the time. You know, we saw Billy's Because We Want To vibe in the Poll Winners Party Awards.
Steps.
We have Steps with The Way You Make Me Feel, Christina with this. Like, they really did something with Titanic. And I know that isn't really Titanic, but it just feels so adjacent to all of that. All the girls wanted to dress up in a way.
Exactly. It's the kind of princess fantasy, isn't it? It's giving you that medieval cutaway. But it's so jarring. It doesn't really fit with everything else in a song. But I wish that if they wanted to do that, they would have done a little bit more of a, you know, what a girl wants through the ages. So we get medieval princess and then it just becomes more of a modern woman over time.
Yeah, and it could have been the same, or it could have been Christina and the same boy, but in so many different looks over the years.
Yes, and she's constantly trying to tell the male species what a girl wants. Oh,
yeah.
Ron Fair, where were you? What were you thinking? We were right here. We were available.
What were you thinking? You know, 8 and 10 year olds on set. Now, what it needs, right?
Listen here, Ron, yeah? We'll tell you what a girl wants.
But David, did you know, Mr. Lim, that this song is a cover?
No, I did not. Oh, my God.
This song was originally written and recorded by a French singer. Let's see.
Ophélie Winter. Ophélie Winter.
Yes, thank you.
She is, according to the Wikipedia page, she is a French hip-hop R&B singer and actress. She looks a little bit like Danny Minogue in that picture, actually. Ooh, hello.
Sexy. And this was from her 1998 album Privacy.
Privé, as the Holly Valance account
Instagram
is.
Still waiting to be approved. Privé, don't bother. I still bothered. Not being accepted. I just love you so much, Holly. But yes, it was then presented to Ron Fair as What a Girl Needs. And he said, this needs to be What a Girl Wants, not What a Girl Needs.
Yeah, I think it's definitely stronger to go with What a Girl Wants. It's more post-girl power, female empowerment. She's telling you what a girl wants. And I think it must have been around this time they had that film, obviously no connection to this, What Women Want. Do you remember that film with Helen Hunt?
Oh, do I? Do I? Of course I remember that film. But David, in 2002, there was the film, maybe 2003, What a Girl Wants, starring Amanda Bynes, and the song's not in it. It's like Love Don't Cost a Thing and the film with Christina Milian, and the J-Lo song's not in it.
I know, missed opportunity there.
So David, this song was another monumental success for Kagi. Number one on the Billboard Hot 100 again. Number three here in the UK. Number five in Australia.
Wow. Look, we really were feeling Christina Aguilera in this time. Like, this was so huge. And I can't believe it. Like, two consecutive number one singles in America. Like, She's on fire.
That is
big.
Platinum in America, silver in the UK, gold in Australia, gold in Belgium, New Zealand, and Sweden.
So we must also say this single, What a Girl Wants, was nominated for Best Female Pop Vocal at the 43rd Grammy Awards in 2001. And do you know what? The previous single, Genie in a Bottle, also got a Grammy nomination for Best Female Pop Vocal Performance. So listen, the Grammys were noting Miss Aguilera, that's for sure.
Speaking of the Grammys, David, let's move on to Grammys 2000.
Wow, what a year this was. February 2000, Christina Aguilera wins Best New Artist at the Grammys. She, in her category, Britney Spears, Macy Gray, Kid Rock, and some woman called Susan Tedeschi. Look, no respect, no disrespect, Susan. I'm sure we'll get to your Right Back At You episode soon.
Yeah, I mean, look, if we were on YouTube, there'd just be a comment, Susan is my aunt. You just get those random YouTube comments.
Susan is my primary school teacher. Funny she never mentioned Christina or Britney before.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, what a fantastic win for Christina.
And she was not prepared for this win. What a year it was. I think in her mind, it probably would have gone to Britney because Britney performed at that particular Grammy ceremony. She did From the Bottom of My Broken Heart and Baby One More Time. And just the look on Christina's face when they called out her name, it was just pure shock. And in the documentary, Ron Fair told her, you should just prepare a little speech just in case. She was just like, no, it's not going to be me. Like, I'm not going to win this. And then goes on stage, bumbles through it, but it was just like absolute pure shock. And it was so sweet. There was a moment where she looked straight into the camera and mouthed mommy, like as in like just a little shout out to her mom, which is so sweet.
I couldn't be there, so she looked at the camera and she shouted mommy, and I knew that was for me. And she turned to us in March 2000 with her next single, I Turn to You.
Now this one, Jolie B, wow. This was the standard for them kids at school wanting to be the next pop star. I just, for years and years, this was just all you would, oh God, I was so sick of it.
You just sat there, rolling your eyes, you know.
I think I've heard more students' renditions of I Turn to You than like actually listening to Christina's.
Do you think this is the forgotten moment of this era?
No, not to me, because I keep hearing it everywhere. Is it a little bit forgotten here in the UK?
To me, but I'm just one person. Listeners, let us know if you think this is the forgotten moment of the era, or is JB just lost it? Both are very plausible. So, David, this song is a gorgeous, gorgeous ballad, and it has a very serious music video, and it has all great pieces, but I'm not sure if it all works well together.
It's très dramatique. There's a lot of budget. There's acting involved, and Christina is sort of the kind of vocal angel that's coasting through it. Different scenes, she's in the rain. Gorgeous straightened hair, obviously, but like it's trying to give you a soundtrack moment.
Yeah, and it's also, well, it's funny you should say that, David, because did you know that this song is a cover? It is a cover of the All For One song, and it was from the Space Jam soundtrack, written by Diane Warren, and it was Diane Warren that suggested this would be great for Christina's voice. I mean, I bet she was like, I've written this amazing song, and it's been overshot, like, you know, it's just been on the Space Jam soundtrack. It's not at its moment in the sun. I know.
Yeah.
A member of the Fab Four.
Yeah, look, honestly, I love Space Jam. I love the film, but I didn't even know that this was on.
Do you know who else loved this song, David? A young American recording artist called Lady Gaga. She said that she was inspired by Christina's version of this track. She's quoted as saying, when I was 15, I was singing I Turn to You at the top of my lungs, trying to hit all her notes. So she was an inspiration to me to have a wider vocal range.
You know what, Joel? There can be 99 people in a room, but it only takes one to turn to you.
But yes, I think a ballad for the debut would not be the way to go. Because she has the chops and she's going to show it to you, but why not cause a splash first?
Sometimes you just got to, yeah, maybe go with the experts on this one. And later in Christina's career, she gets much more say in her single choices, the direction and stuff like that. But I think at this point, you got to hand it to Ron Fair and the team at RCA. They played this out really, really nicely, which is why this was another big hit for Christina on her debut.
Number 3 in America, David, which is absolutely phenomenal because we know how tough the American charts are. Really good on you, Kaggy. Number 19 here in the UK and number 40 in Australia. The girlies didn't love it as much as the up-tempos.
They were too busy with their own rendition to go out and buy the single.
Yeah, they've just they bought the karaoke track, which doesn't count towards the charts. The summer that year, things are going to get really interesting. Christina Aguilera kicks off her debut concert in May 2000. Now, this will continue off and on from May until February, from May 2000 until February 2001. So, you know, our pop girls, they got these dates, they got summer venues, they got tours. Big, big deal. And the support act was Destiny's Child.
Oh my God. Can you imagine seeing Christina Aguilera live and Destiny's Child as well? Child.
Oh, and there's another concert that we've watched before. It's online in full. Christina's headlining this show. And the support acts are Mandy Moore, my fave, and Vitamin C, your fave.
The VC. Yeah, I think that was like some sort of regional radio festival.
Yeah, Romford.
But the VC was giving you like, you know, O2 Arena level performances there. She came with a choreo and she was not mucking about.
Oh, like that's, imagine if we could time travel and we were at that concert.
Oh, insane.
That's the Right Back At You movie.
Look, around this time, on the set list of this tour, Christina was starting to tease Spanish language songs from her forthcoming Spanish language album, Mi Reflejo, which I hope I'm saying it right, guys, sorry, which is, yeah, the Spanish version of her debut album. So it's nice that she's getting it out there, testing it on the road, you know what I mean? Like just, yeah, giving you that range and giving a bit of buzz, but also like there is a cover of Etta James At Last in there, you know, giving that old school soul that she always likes to talk about. It's just, yeah, she's giving you that breath of just go, look, I'm not just a teen pop artist. My references are this and this and this.
Guys, girlies, non-binary friends, it is time to plug in our red hair clip in extension.
This is my favorite song that we're going to cover in this episode today, except for Lady Marmalade, of course, which we know is unbeatable. But from this album, this is it for me, the JB. This is it for me.
To me, David, is the greatest of all time. Best song, best Y2K music video, best routine. Like, this is a dream Y2K. This is everything we love. Like, it's expensive. Oh, but David, I'm sure I've said it on this podcast before, but I love a good stairs moment in pop music. When someone,
do you think
uses...
she was trying to give you like a recreation of the what's that Marilyn film that Madonna references?
Oh, yeah.
Diamonds Are Girls' Best Friend. Yeah, and the pink thing where they do the stairs and she's coming down. Do you think that's sort of like a Y2K nod to that?
Maybe. That's a good...
Or maybe they just love stairs.
Maybe they just like the JB and love stairs. The red hair extensions, David, is one of my favourite hair looks of all time.
Iconic.
This is a fantastic pop star look. If I was a drag queen, I would need to recreate this look.
So many girls in high school had this hair. Like, this was Christina's impact, truly. And then later on, when she went through the dirty phase where it was like the underlayers was brown and then the blonde on top, all the girls at school did it as well. She really was a style icon, our Xtina.
Oh, I think I might have even a few years later tried to work the clip-ins, but with short hair and then these long clip-ins, I was just like, I loved it. I thought I was a Bratz doll. I thought I was Christina Aguilera. I thought I was all of it.
It's really giving me like kind of the energy of Mariah's Heartbreaker. It's got that kind of really fun, bubbly pop R&B moment. And also your girl, Jessica Simpson, I Think I'm In Love. Like, it's got that kind of essence of it, doesn't it? And I can't believe this, but Christina here with single number 4 is really coming for another song of the summer.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a re-record from the original album version. So we're going to kick off a special edition of the Christina Aguilera album. It went from Come On Over to Come On Over, Baby.
In brackets, All I Want Is You. Like, she really wants to let you know her intentions there.
And it is not to be confused with our girl Sam Mumba's hit, Baby Come On Over, brackets, This Is Our Night. Sam had to change the name of that to not be confused with Christina's.
Yes, I remember when we were doing a Samantha Mumba episode. It's so wild, isn't it, that they were, promoting around the same time. But you know what? Plenty of room in our hearts for both singles. So the original album version had no bridge. It was previously performed live with a little bit of Got To Be Real by Cheryl Lynn in there. But for the actual recording, they denied the clearance to use that, which is a little bit shit. But
yeah, but for the best, though.
I think looking at our run of singles, this is probably the first time we're hearing Christina singing that kind of really signature Christina way. You know what I mean? That tone that is very synonymous with Christina. Like, come on over, come on over, baby. It's like a deeper, more soulful tone. Whereas the other two singles was a little bit lighter, wasn't it?
Gives you the Christina power from the get-go of the song.
This stunning music video, Joel, was directed by Paul Hunter, who also did Mariah Carey's Honey video.
Oh,
very iconic.
Incredible video. I love the green colour palette, the red colour palette. Oh, it is just your Y2K goldfish bowl music video dream. And do you know what also slaps, David? Slaps you in the face twice. The Spanish version of this song. Ven conmigo, ven conmigo, baby. So the Spanish version, David, was a number one single on Billboard's Hot Latin Tracks chart. So I'm just going to give you that. And now we're going to go into the charts of Come On Over, Baby, All I Want Is You. Another number one in America, David. That is huge.
Incredible. Three number one singles from this debut album for Kagi.
Yaggy, yaggy, yaggy. Number 8 here in the UK, which is fantastic. The album's been out for ages. And they might have gone and bought the special edition, but no, they're still getting
which
the single.
Which is why, actually, looking at the timing, this was when the album peaked at number 14. So it was off the strength of this single, surely.
This song's power, it made me go and get it a few years later. Just, oof. I mean, all the mums at Woolworths going out to get it for Denise. Number 9 in Australia.
We were feeling it. We came over.
7 in Croatia, 19 on the European Hot 100 singles. Number 1 in Guatemala. That must have been the Spanish
version. Hello. Not everybody has that.
Welcome to the podcast. Number 4 in Hungary, 3 in Iceland, 9 in Ireland, 2 in New Zealand, number 9 in Scotland. So really doing wonders and numbers. Platinum in Australia, gold in New Zealand, platinum in the USA.
I'm just only seeing now in the track listing on the UK Maxi CD, there is a Sunship vocal mix of Come On Over, Baby.
Oh, hello? My God.
Mystique coming back strong. I need to hear this remix because we need a garage version of Xtina.
Oh, she would
one
be.
One for the Romford Darlings.
She gives Kent girl vibes, Kagi Agi Agi. So she would love, like, she'd be a garage darling.
Get Lisa Mafia on the feature, you know, like really give us that UK moment. That's what we needed to come on over.
And then a Mobile Awards performance.
Oh my God. Yes. Very defining of the time.
I think that would have added another like really cool string to her bow, the garage album. But while we didn't get the garage moment, we did get a Spanish album in September 2000. Now this had 5 Spanish versions of tracks from Christina Aguilera, 2 covers and 4 original tracks. And upon its release, it did actually get a lot of mixed reviews from critics. I think people thought she was cashing in and she actually doesn't speak Spanish in her day-to-day life. But she did receive a Latin Grammy Award for Best Female Pop Vocal and 2 Billboard Latin Music Awards.
You know what? As a kid at the time, I didn't think that this was out of character because, I mean, also I didn't really look into Christina's background. But looking at the surname Aguilera, I think, you know, me as this Malaysian kid growing up in Australia, I'm just like, okay, well, that kind of sounds Spanishy. So, yeah, maybe she is a little bit Spanish. Yeah, what say you, Jennifer Lopez? The producer of the album said, look, Christina wanted to connect with her roots, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it could have been just RCA going, listen, we got to ride this Spanish wave and there is a little bit of a connection with you. How about it?
Haha, I'd love to. this album, Christina Aguilera, the debut album, I see it as its own very standalone album because what we're about to see from Christina in what will hopefully be our next episode is such a unique evolution of her, a kind of re-identity. So I see this Christina Aguilera as a really standalone time, and I see the Spanish album and the Christmas album as kind of 2 mini spin-off albums.
Yeah, they're sort of moons that satellite around this planet of Christina Aguilera. And to promote Mi Reflejo, which again, guys, sorry if I'm saying it wrong, Christina extended her tour into 2001 for 8 more dates. She played in Mexico, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, Panama, and of course, the huge Spanish-speaking territory of Japan.
Go for it, Kegs. So this album was the best-selling Latin pop album of 2000. And was certified 6 times platinum. Number 2 in Argentina and Uruguay, and number 5 in Mexico, and sold 2.2 million copies worldwide. What do you do when you release your Latin pop album, David? You follow it up with your Hun's Christmas album, My Kind of Christmas, October 2000. Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
Christmas time is.
I love a Christmas
banger.
Time. This is a highlight on my Christmas playlist. And I know you said before that I don't like Christmas music, but I actually do get into my Christmas playlist quite early on. Like I feel like mid-November, late November, I actually start to quietly play it to myself.
The other standout for me is this year. It's an R&B sexy Christmas. Just love this Christmas. Yeah. You'll be my spring ahead, my fall behind. Shimmy on my hips, so when I want them right, you'll be my Santa boy, all dressed in red. And it wouldn't be Christmas without Xtina's Xmas interlude. And last but not least for me, Pass the Poppers for the Christmas song Holiday Remix.
But you know what I love? they didn't even like do a Christmassy shoot for this. They just used like some generic photo from her press shoots and just put some snowflakes around it.
Now, was anyone questioning her authenticity to Christmas? Honestly.
Yeah.
But it did hit number one on the US top holiday albums charts and 28 on the Billboard 200. Number 21 on the UK budget albums chart. Hello.
I beg your pardon. Budget albums chart.
I think that must have been from a re-release in a later year. I bet they did like a £5 re-release in like 2010 or something. We round off December with another Spanish single, David. And what I found really interesting is, because obviously we've been in this era for such a long time now, we're actually starting to, what I feel like, really minute sightings of the next era. Like, you can just tell she's evolving. Underneath it all, Stripped is starting to birth.
Yeah, definitely interesting that you're saying that, because she had a change of management in late 2000. So there was a feeling that she was outgrowing her original manager. And also she wasn't overly pleased with being so overworked and underlooked after. RCA went and hired Irving Azoff, which is, I believe, still Christina's management to this day still. He definitely came, cleaned house and just put structures in place that Christina can be more of an artist and have more of a say.
And I mean, paid off it did. But before then, let's kick off 2001, January, Nobody Wants to Be Lonely, duet with Ricky Martin.
Oh my God.
I love this song, David.
I love this song. This is like one of my favorite Christina Aguilera songs of all time. This was a huge radio hit in Australia. You just, God, the vocal blend of these two. Nobody wants to cry. Slipping away, and I've been waiting for you all of my life. No.
This is one of my favorite two big pop stars teaming up duets, you know, an event. And but you know, a lot of the time the event, the song isn't as good as the event itself, but here it is.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time talking about the female duets, like the big female duets of my time, Brandy and Monica, Whitney and Mariah, but I need to be shouting about this a lot more because these are two young divas here.
You are correct. Two young divas is the way to say it.
This was co-produced by Walter Afanasieff, who works with Mariah on all her big ballads at this time. We already know that Christina has really made a mark in the Latin pop world. Ricky Martin is the king of Latin pop at this time. So the first live performance of Nobody Wants to Be Lonely was at the American Music Awards in January 2001. So they really were going to create a moment around this and let you guys know that the ballad of the season is here.
I love that in the music video, like, you know, when they look kind of like too good to be true, you know, obviously they're done up and whatever, but they just, like, I love that kind of, like, they almost look like Disney characters, like they're just too gorgeous. Ballad of the season, it was number 8 in Australia, David, and number 4 here in the UK, 13 on the Billboard Hot 100, number 1 in Hungary, thank you Hungary, number 2 in Greece, number 4 in Finland, number 2 on the European Hot 100 singles, number 1 in Croatia. Could anyone foresee that the biggest collaboration of our lifetime?
Oh, what
was
comes
coming?
Next? April 2001, Lady Marmalade for the Moulin Rouge soundtrack, Christina Aguilera, Pink, Lil Kim, and Maya. They really shook the table with this one. Yeah. It's a cultural reset, as the kids say.
This song still has such an impact now to our generation, like when it comes on and everything. Like,
she come through with the money in the garter bags and let them know about that cake straight up the gate. Oh, we independent women, some mistake is for hoes. I say, why spend mine when I could spend yours? Disagree? Well, that's you and I'm sorry. I'm going to keep... Anyway, yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, Maya says this in the interview with us that... it's almost like this moment wouldn't happen again now because it took so much to get four young divas, you know, their diaries at the peak of their careers. But I mean, we say peak, but, you know, Pink was kind of coming up into second album era, very prominent debut album era. Maya had a big hit with Case of the X, Lil' Kim, How Many Licks around that time, also very big. Christina, obviously massive, winning Grammys and, you know, huge debut album. They all felt like they were just the next generation of women to watch. And then you've got Missy Elliott there, pulling this together as a co-producer. So that was just chef's kiss.
Now, they originally, I think Christina's team thought this was too edgy.
She, as a young woman, she was what, 22 or 21 at this point? It kind of felt like, yeah, it speaks to her. And obviously she loves R&B music. This is a LaBelle classic. So, and God, she can really do Patti LaBelle's vocals justice here.
Absolutely. And I think really it was probably a real gift for her at this time because it helped sort of set a stone into the next era, didn't it?
It's a gift for all the ladies. Yeah, absolutely. Needless to say, yeah, won a Grammy, a really big deal, VMA award, best video. I mean, it's just, it doesn't get better than this, guys. So Jolie B, can I ask you, and I already know the answer to this, but back at like the school days when this song was, you know, on the radios and everywhere, which verse would you sing? All of it.
All of it, yeah. Obviously, I loved like Maya saying, hello, hey, Joe, because it was so close to Joel. So I would always say Joel. I loved sort of just everyone's ad libs, like Chris singing like, hey, hey, hey. And then, Maya.
I imagine you would take the Christina verse and like really just like mama love.
Who would you sing along as?
Do you know what? I always really like served it with the Pink verse because I think even as a teenager I had like a little bit of a raspy tone to my voice. So I really love to sell it in Pink's verse.
Guys, go and check out our Pink episode. Go and check out our chat with Maya. Lots to talk about with this, but really, it's still one when it comes on with the girls. Number one hit in Australia, in the UK, and America.
The song also holds the record for the longest reigning number one on Billboard's mainstream top 40 chart for an all-female collaboration. It topped the chart for 9 consecutive weeks.
So anyway, a album entitled Just Be Free is released in August 2001.
Now, this is dead cheeky. And you know what? It's not really the purpose of our episode here because we're here to celebrate the real debut album of Christina Aguilera. But look, these were demos that she made years before her debut. Like, some of them weren't even completed songs. But cheekily, the people that owned the recordings fashioned them into, like, just new tracks and backing tracks and stuff to make it sound like a full song. And she really tried to get it halted because it's not the quality of recording and vocals that she would give her fans. So she didn't think it was fair for this to be out there.
But it did get released on the understanding that Christina could have a note in it, basically explaining this isn't artistically what I would like to put out. And you will see that in my album coming out next year. But David Lim,
you do like it.
This album does low-key slap. Let's be real. Especially...
there's also like cheap kind of 90s dance bops here.
It's so like Europop. Just Be Free is such a banger. Like, it lives rent-free in my mind 24-7. Moving through the rhythm, dance on hope and... And then Move It is such a fun,
Move It,
cheesy pop in brackets, moment.
Dance mix.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Shake it, baby. Gotta go. Listen to the music. We're the Right Back At You Boys. And if something's trying to be billed to you as the Lost Christina Aguilera debut album, that is going to tickle my interests.
So this album, even though Christina wasn't doing promo for it, it reached number 71 on a Billboard 200, selling over 129,000 copies. I mean, most people's real albums these days don't even sell that. But this was the time Christina Aguilera was top of the world, yeah.
And it is on Spotify if that tickles your interest, so do give it a listen. Well, Davo, do we have anything else to say?
No, but except what a joy it has been to dive into this epic era off one of our Fab Fours. JB, I'm so happy that we, in the last minute, decided to do this because Christina actually wasn't this high up in the list. But we thought, do you know what? Let's do a one album episode. And turns out to be a one album with two satellite albums around it. So we'd like to give you more.
A Marvel Universe, yes. I thought it was excellent. Xtina, extravaganza. I love this album. I love this era. I love big American late 90s teen pop. I love the Fab Four. I love Kagiyagi. I've got to go and see Christina Aguilera on her last tour, David. Did you get to go and see it?
No, I've never seen her live before. Do you know what? I bought tickets for her Back to Basics tour in Australia, but I couldn't go in the end because one of my grandparents were really ill. So we flew out to Malaysia. So yeah, miss Christina that time. But you know what? I will see her in the future. I know it. Our paths will cross. Please, Christina, do a Bionic tour, like a Bionic anniversary tour, perhaps. I would be there for that.
I saw the X tour in Berlin. It was one of the best nights of my life. I enjoyed myself so much so that the people behind me afterwards went to me, "Didn't you enjoy that?"
Oh, shut up. You know I did.
They said it nicely, but it was just because they had me jumping up and down in my platforms the whole time. But anyway, she is incredible and I would love to see her again live soon. But David, I've loved this so much and I hope it's the first of many Kagiyagi episodes to come.
We need to touch on Stripped. We need to talk about Bionic, which is my favourite, which I think is actually technically out of the noughties, but
oh, we'll hey, do it, darling.
We got Back to Basics as well.
I love Back to Basics.
I mean, that's a 2-disc album, honeys. Editing is not what Christina Aguilera does.
No. And that's the truth on that. Ha ha. All right, guys, you have been listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s pop music podcast. Follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. Give us an email, rightbackpod@gmail.com. Please do hit that subscribe button. Leave a lovely 5-star review. Tell a friend, tell your mum, tell your Christina Aguilera stans. Tell Kaggy if you know her. You can follow me at Dr_JoelB on all platforms, and you can follow him at
Lovely Me.
Next time, haha. Bye. Bye.